the opening prologue, it's really setting up the world.
Don't worry! I'm gonna cushion our fall with this water bucket!
Release!
What's your first step into this world, right? Our producer, Kel Boyter, finally landed on the idea of Jack Black, who was playing Steve. Why don't we have Jack narrate the film?
Life here was perfect. Until one day, we came across the Nether.
To get to that point was probably 6 or 7 months of editing before that idea came up. And that was a real game changer for us.
If we want to save this world, creativity is key to survival.
Everyone, excited to be back with you all for another episode of the Post Production Club podcast. Today, we're hearing from legendary editor James Thomas. Of late, he's worked on the Minecraft movie, which is what we really get to hear a lot about and dive into. The hit film that just totally went viral. We talk about that with James and get to hear his reaction to the viral sensation that this movie became in a theater going experience. But this guy is just absolutely legend. He kind of comes from what I would call a golden age of filmmaking through the 80s, 90s, early 2000s, up until now. He is a London-born editor who now lives and works in LA. Really got his start on Borat and working closely with Sacha Baron Cohen on that. And after that success of the movie, he then collaborated with Sasha for 20 years working on his next 3 films. So then having worked with the team on the Borat films, he got connected to the Flight of the Conchords, worked on that through HBO, the recent 2 Muppet movies for Disney. He worked on the Pokemon Detective Pikachu movie. And then that all led to him working on Minecraft. So you'll get to hear a little bit more about that in depth. But man, this guy has breadth of knowledge and kind of an old world, and then even gets to speak on his process, what it looks like to work on a large movie like that, what it feels like to be kind of pinned into that comedy corner, even though you have maybe more aspirations to do things outside of that. We talk about lots of stuff, all the way from work-life balance to building a team, to an editing team to work on a movie as big as Minecraft. So I won't spoil any more of it. So let's just go ahead and dive in and hear the rest from the man himself. All right, James, well, thanks for coming on today.
It's a pleasure. It's great to meet you.
So I'd love to just start by hearing a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and how you ended up working on the Minecraft movie. What brought you to that moment?
A long journey, 36 years of cutting to get to that to Minecraft. But yeah, I grew up in London. I started my career wanting to work in the music industry as a recording mixer. I wanted to mix records, but that didn't really pan out for me. And so I pursued a career as a chef for a while. So I went and learned how to cook, and I worked at various hotels in London. I worked at Claridge's and the Savoy and those hotels in London. And then pretty quickly realized that that wasn't for me. A friend was working in a post house in Covent Garden, and she called one day and said, "We're down a runner. We need someone to come in and make tea for this week. Do you want to come in?" And I was like, I was literally sitting around at home wearing out pairs of pants. So I was like, yeah, sure, why not? Went in and kind of looked around and was immediately kind of taken with how similar it was to how I imagined the record business to be. This was like the late 80s in London, and I guess it was 1986 in London, so a long time ago.
Wow.
I kind of took a look around and was like, this is pretty awesome. This is pretty cool. And it was a nascent industry at that time. They were mostly making commercials and music videos. And I got a job as a runner. So I was basically getting tea and coffee for directors and that kind of thing. And then started talking to the editors and the assistants. Was mentored basically by a couple of ex-BBC editors who were then working at that post-production facility. And they taught me everything. I mean, they really sort of mentored me, and it was fantastic. And so from there, I then decided that I would like to move into TV. So then I got an opportunity, again, just some luck. I was hired on a show called The 11 O'Clock Show, which was Channel 4 in the UK's attempt to make like an SNL type show. And we were three times a week, 30 minutes each episode, and live, basically. The show was live, but there were some VT inserts, you know, there were little skits, 5-minute skits or whatever. And the two big breakout people from that were Sacha Baron Cohen and Ricky Gervais. So that's where I met Sacha. You know, he was developing his characters, so Ali G, Borat, Bruno. And I was just really very fortunate to be literally there at the right time, you know? I'm incredibly grateful. It was a kind of crash course in comedy, you know, guerrilla kind of filmmaking, if you like. Everything was very down and dirty. And I forged a relationship with Sacha and his producers and a director called James Bobin, who I then went on to work with. We worked on the Ali G show for HBO, then Flight of the Conchords for HBO. And then eventually Sacha got the opportunity to make some movies. And so I jumped on the bandwagon for those. And that led to, I think with Sacha, I did maybe 5 or 6 movies. And then James Bobin got the opportunity to direct the Muppets films for Disney. And so I was very lucky to get onto those. And those were a fantastic experience. I loved every minute working with Brett McKenzie from Concords. There's a lot of crossover of people. You know, we'd worked on projects with people previously, and James is very good at getting people together. So Brett did the music for the Muppets. Jermaine was in the second one. And then just continued to work on features. Worked with Legendary, so quite a lot. I've done 5 or 6 movies for them. Mary Parent and Kale Boyter, who have been absolutely wonderful people to collaborate with and have been very supportive of me and have encouraged me throughout my career. And I think our first movie was Hot Tub Time Machine together. And then we did SpongeBob. We did a couple of movies. We'd just done The Toxic Avenger, which we finished a couple of years ago. It's about to be released. They finally found a distributor for that. And then Minecraft, and met Jared Hess. We'd never worked together before. He'd always been one of my absolute comedy heroes. Always, you know, since Napoleon, I was like, goodness, if I ever get a chance to work with this guy, I would jump at it. And as chance had it, I got the opportunity, and we had a great time. Yeah, we had a really wonderful time working together.
So tell me about what it was like to develop a continued relationship with someone like Sacha through your beginnings. What would it look like for you as an editor to stay in touch with him and then end up getting the call and the gig to work with him on his films?
It was really the 11 o'clock show was the first place that we met. And it was kind of this incredible place, really. I was the oldest person working on the show. I was 30 years old. And literally, I was the oldest person on the show. And Channel 4 just gave effectively a bunch of kids a ton of money and said, make a show. And everyone went, okay. And kind of just figured it out as we went along. So that was my first opportunity to work with Sacha. And then, you know, that went well. That all kind of worked out. And James Bobin was directing his little segments on the show. And then we got the opportunity to do the Ali G show for Channel 4. So like a actual series of shows for Channel 4 rather than just the 5-minute skits. I was involved with that. That then led to HBO picking up their version of the Ali G show. So we made, I think, 2 seasons of that for HBO. And then, you know, it was a natural progression for him. His career then led to people, you know, wanting to make movies, and came up with Borat. And it was a very under the radar project. You know, it was a project that no one really got here. They didn't fully understand it. They knew the character. They'd sort of seen him on the Channel 4 and the HBO show, but people didn't really know the character. And so the movie ended up at Fox, very low budget. It was like a $13 million budget. And it was just a bunch of English people mucking about, really. And we got the opportunity to do that, and we started showing that to audiences, and it tested really well. And that was his first big success in terms of movie making. And I happened to be along for the ride. So that opened so many doors for me. That one movie just changed the whole trajectory of my career.
Yeah. And you're being very humble about it, but what does it look like for you as an editor to really like lean in as a collaborator with someone like him, you know, throughout the process? Is that something that you're just like, oh, I'm just like waiting around for him to call me? Or like, what is it as an editor to network and build that relationship, you know, with someone like him?
It's a twofold thing, right? So I was very fortunate to be in the right place at the right time. But then the good luck only goes a certain way. You have to be in sync. You have to have the same sensibilities. You have to ultimately, with someone of his caliber of comedy, you have to have a similar sense of humor. And so it was a lot of hard work and a lot of experimentation. You know, with those shows, it's very freeform. It's not, I mean, they do write scripts, but they often don't go according to plan, right? Because you're shooting with real people, you're in the real world, and, you know, Sasha's a master at steering scenes with real people, but sometimes it doesn't go completely according to plan. But yeah, I just feel very, very fortunate to have had that initial exposure to someone of his caliber. But then after that, it was just a question of nose to the grindstone, learning your craft. And I was learning my craft as we went along. You know, as a kid growing up, as an adolescent, as a teenager, I'd always loved comedy, but I'd never thought of it as a career, as a writer or an editor or to be involved. And so I guess it all kind of originated from a shared sensibility of humor. Right. So James Bobin, the director, Sasha, me, Dan Mazer, his producer, we all grew up at a certain time in London and were exposed to certain shows, shared a very similar sense of humor, I guess.
Yeah, that's really cool that he found someone like you as a collaborator, you know, over all of those films and years, and that you've continued to lean in as a very comedic minded editor. You know, I think that's why you've made it to the spot that you're in. And I think that's really, really cool to hear. Did you always know you wanted to be in movies at this caliber as an editor? Did you ever have dreams of doing anything different?
That's an interesting question. It just sort of progressed. So I never really set out to, I never thought, yeah, I didn't wake up one day and think, I want to work in features in Hollywood. But as things started to unfold and that became a very real possibility, I was really excited by that. You know, I'll never forget leaving London, flying to LA, completely green, honestly. I mean, completely green. 2000 and whenever it was, 2003. And we'd been here doing a bit of the Ali G show for HBO, so I knew LA a little bit. But the opportunity to go and, you know, work on a movie for Fox, and I was just so excited.
That's so cool. And for people that are wondering when to pick up and move to a specific location, you know, as a part of their dream, how did you decide? What would you say to someone that's looking to make that decision?
Well, of course, now, you know, London is where all the production happens. So, you know, I suspect my future's going to have quite a few London-based jobs in it. And in fact, Minecraft, all the production and post was done in New Zealand. So we shot in Auckland for 4 months, and then we went down to Wellington to Peter Jackson's place in Wellington, which was just an incredible experience to be there. And obviously the legacy of all the work that he's done, and he's built this incredible post-production facility down there called Park Road, which is truly beautiful. It's the nicest place you're ruined forever after working there for cutting rooms, because no cutting room is ever going to come close. My advice in terms of moving would be, like with anything with it, is just trust your gut. I think at that time, the industry here was obviously incredibly buoyant, and the move made sense for me. I'd always wanted to live in the States, and so that worked out great. But as I say, the production, a lot of production is now happening back in London. And so it's funny, we're having this conversation today at lunch just with the team that I'm working on this current movie with. We were just talking about how now with technology and what happened during the pandemic, how you really can be completely, you know, you can live anywhere in the world. You can be a nomad, basically. You can have your base, but then you'll travel for production. And, you know, I've got a young daughter, so I try not to be away for too long, although I was away for a long stint last year. So I like to try and do production away if we have to, because, you know, these productions get a lot of tax incentives to go and shoot New Zealand or London or Georgia or wherever it is. But then I like to try and be home in Los Angeles for post. But travel, yeah. I mean, I think just be open. My advice to anyone would be just be open and trust your gut, right? You know, if something feels right, and if it does and you're able, go for it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So up until your journey your arrival at the Minecraft movie. This seems like it was pretty up and to the right, but I highly doubt that that was the case. I would love to hear about maybe like one or two of the moments that you feel like were really particularly challenging, like, or like a low point as it relates to your creative journey.
Yeah, I mean, definitely there were points at every stage in my career, like early on. So when I was first working commercials and music videos, I had a stint where that went well. And then I wanted to make the segue into television. And that segue into television was brutal. It didn't just line up with the 11 o'clock show. You know, I was editing corporate videos for like IBM in London and doing stuff that, you know, I worked on the National Lottery. You know, they used to do these little VT inserts and we used to fly off and work on that. So yeah, it wasn't all up to the right all the way. There was definitely some ups and downs. And I think, you know, when I got to Hollywood as well, it was Borat and Sasha was a really good run. And then after that, I had a bit of a lull. And obviously the pandemic wreaked havoc. And then the two strikes, it hasn't all been exactly where I want it to be, but touch wood, I've been very lucky and have continued to be able to work. That's the main thing, I think. Even if you're doing stuff that maybe isn't in your overall plan of where you see yourself, if you keep applying the craft of editing and you keep learning about sound and just all the little technique. I mean, our job is it's about technique, right? And if you keep adapting and learning those different skills, then you will continue to evolve, even if you're working on something that isn't 100% where you see yourself headed. But if you keep doing the work, keep persevering, and keep doing it to a quality that you set for yourself, you know, you've got to set your own benchmark, then I think it will pay off.
So then you get the call from Jared to go work on Minecraft. What were you feeling when you found out you were going to get that job?
So actually, it wasn't Jared who contacted me. It was Cale Boyter and Mary Parent at Legendary. And because we'd had a long-term kind of working relationship, they suggested me to Jared. So Jared, I think, met a few candidates. But as soon as I met him, I hoped that we were going to hit it off. And we did. We spent some time talking about, you know, movies that we enjoyed and just sort of goofing around. Jared he's the easiest going. He's literally the least difficult person to have an interview with, let's put it that way. I was nervous going into the interview, but he put me at ease straight away. And we just kind of jived with each other and shared a lot of the same ideas and comedy, you know, people that we liked in comedy. And by the end of the, you know, we sat for like an hour and a half or whatever, had lunch together, and he was just like, yeah, let's do it. I was like, great. So it was quite casual. You know, we then ended up having quite an intense period of working. So we were together 14 months working on the movie. He was down in New Zealand the whole time because we got a big tax incentive. And, you know, he's got a big family. I've got a family. And so it stresses on us being away from everyone for that long. But it also allowed us to just really focus on what we were there to do. You know, he likes to rework things. I come from that same sort of world with Sasha, where Sasha, you'll show him something and he's like, yeah, it's great. But now show me 10 different ways of doing it. You know, Jared's like that too. And I really appreciate that because you do really mine and work the material and ultimately end up with, I think, the best versions of scenes. But yeah, I was the next biggest movie, I guess, to Minecraft that I'd done was Pikachu, Detective Pikachu, again for Legendary. And I was a co-editor on that film. So Mark Sanger was my co-editor. And I came in sort of, I think, halfway through the director's cut. So Minecraft was the first big budget studio movie from the get-go that I'd been on. And so I was incredibly excited to have that opportunity.
Do you have an example of a scene in the movie that Jared had you iterate upon?
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen the movie, but the opening prologue, it's really setting up the world, right? So Minecraft's an interesting proposition, IP, to make into a feature because, of course, it's a sandbox game, right? It's literally, there is no story. Every player has their own interpretation of how they're playing, what they want to build. That's why the movie is called a Minecraft movie rather than the Minecraft movie. Jared and Legendary and Warner's came up with this concept and Mojang came up with this concept of let's call it a Minecraft movie, because then it's a nod to how people play the game. No two people's experience of playing the game is going to be the same. So how what's your first step into this world, right? For a bunch of hardcore gamers who really want and need you to get this right, how do we get this right? So we went round and round and round on the opening of that film many, many times. And our producer, Kel Boyter, finally landed on the idea of Jack Black, who was playing Steve. There's Steve and Alex, the male and female skin within the game. And Jack was playing Steve. And Kel came up with this great idea of, why don't we have Jack narrate the film? So he basically tells us, he lays out the stall at the beginning of the movie. And that was a real game changer for us. As soon as we lent into that idea, everything just kind of fell into place. But that took, to get to that point, was probably 6 or 7 months of editing before that idea came up.
Wow. The moment that you're working through this, did you approach it with any difference of process from how you approach, say, Pikachu or even Borat, any other movie? Like, was there anything majorly different from how you worked through the editorial process of this film?
Definitely. So with Sasha's movies, first of all, they're not big visual effects movies, right? So they're dialogue-led, they're dialogue-driven, they're scenario and comedy-driven. Whereas with a movie like Minecraft, you're turning over shots to Weta, who was one, we had Weta Digital Domain, and Sony were our three big visual effects vendors. I think there was close to 2,000 visual effects shots in the movie. And very elaborate world creation, all of these 8-bit, in effect, characters from the game had to be made photo real. And so that was a huge undertaking for our visual effects team, Dan Lemon, and the folks at Weta and the other vendors. And so we had to, because of the lead time on those shots, you turn a shot over and we wouldn't really see an iteration of it for at least 3, maybe 4 months. And so we had to be quite organized about getting scenes cut and in effect locked, right? Because they have to be locked so you can turn them over. Because if there's any adjustments beyond the parameters of what you've turned over, then costs are incurred. And with a budget like this, visual effects was a huge portion of the budget. So yeah, that was a very different experience for me as an editor. I'm used to just kind of wing it and you kind of, throw some stuff at the wall and see if it sticks. And that type of filmmaking on Minecraft is absolutely, that's not the way you do it. You have to be much more, and it's scripted, obviously. So, the parameters are much more defined for you going in, but you do have to be very disciplined and have an incredible team of people around you who you trust.
Say more to that. Like, when working on a film of this VFX caliber, what advice would you give to editors that are doing that maybe for the first time?
So be as organized as you can and surround yourself with the best possible editorial crew. I've had a first assistant called Delaney Delvecchio, who I've worked with now for, I think we've been together for about six or seven years. I first met her. She was actually a PA on Grimsby, on one of Sasha's movies. And we met, and I think I interviewed her for that position. Literally, she'd just driven across the country from Philadelphia, and we met and we chatted, and I was like, you're great, you've got the best attitude. And so we hired her as a PA, and then she rose up very, very quickly. I had a first at that time that I'd been working with for a long time, and he wanted to go on to cut himself. So there's a certain point at which you help people, you mentor them, and then you have to say, okay, go do your thing. And so Delaney then was great at just being able to step up, incredibly smart, very quick learner. That would be my main advice, is surround yourself with people who maybe you've worked with over a period of time and you trust. And then she put our team together in New Zealand, because neither of us had worked down there before. So, she was on the phone talking to people, talking to other productions down there. And she put together a great team of people from Auckland and then from Wellington. Because obviously there's a skill set down there. There's a lot of people working, quite a few movies get made down there. And so we were lucky to get some really great people.
That's so cool. Yeah. The ability for you to accomplish something is often never solved by asking how, but who.
100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And a movie like Minecraft is so dependent on those key folks, like so the heads of department, you know, Grant Major, our set designer, Dan Lemon, our visual effects supervisor, Enrique Shediak, our DOP. You know, they're all people at the top of their game who Legendary and Warner's and Jared knew they could rely on to deliver. And so I think that's a key part of making these films is putting that team together, you know?
Yeah. So when you were like working on the film, just getting started, did you have experience playing the game? Did you get the game and start playing it at all? Like what was kind of your experience with the game versus the movie?
So I didn't have a ton of experience prior to it, but as soon as I got hired, I was like, damn, I need to do some research. And so, yeah, I went down the rabbit hole, played a lot. I have a 14-year-old daughter and she was, I shouldn't say this, but she was more into Roblox. So she was kind of playing more of that, but I probably shouldn't say that. She played a lot and we kind of talked about it. I'm not a huge gamer myself, but I did my due diligence. I did my research. And then Mojang, Torfi, who runs Mojang, is one of the head guys there. He set a server up for us when we were in production that was just for cast and crew to play. And I'm sure you've read the stories. Jack was on there like every single day playing. And that was, I think, how a lot of people on the crew got their education around the game.
So this film was definitely a cultural moment and it exploded probably way bigger than anyone had expected. Tell me a bit about what that's meant to you, your reflections on the chicken jockey sweeping the nation. Did you ever see that coming?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I think it's that old corny phrase, lightning in a bottle, right? Which you can't, by its definition, you can't see that coming. And I've only ever had it happen twice in my career. The first time was Borat and the second time was Minecraft. Two totally different movies, but the reactions that people had have been so visceral. So no, I don't think any of us saw the meme aspect connecting with the audience in a way that it did. And you know, chicken jockey and I am Steve and all these phrases from the movie that became such incredibly powerful things that were driving audiences and they were waiting for that moment. You know, we did a theater hop on the first night of the release and we bounced around six or seven different theaters and just happened to arrive whenever we got there. And to see audiences reacting in that way was so satisfying. And then obviously that built and built and built to the point where the studio were like, okay, now we're going to have screenings where we encourage people to throw their popcorn and go completely berserk. I'm sure it upset a few theater folks along the way, but yes, I mean, to answer your question, I don't think any of us, I mean, we hoped obviously that the movie was going to be hugely successful and connect with people, but it connected with, you know, kids in a way that I just don't think we could have possibly imagined. It was amazing.
Well, and you naming lightning in a bottle, which is an impossible feat, yet you've done it twice. I think there's a common denominator here between the content that gets made and how well it does, which is you. So I think that's pretty cool.
Well, it's very kind of you to say, but it there's so much goes into it. It's like there's so many factors that go in that are kind of beyond human control in a way. There's an alchemy that happens with something that you definitely can't plan for.
Well, you're a humble guy, so I gotta blow a little smoke up your ass, but that's it. You know, I'm done doing that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That's all I got.
Very cool. So my final like set of questions would be, what are some of the movies that have inspired you that you're really like, yeah, inspired by, excited by, that you've looked to? And then is there anything that inspired how you approached even cutting Minecraft?
Wow, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, I love movies. As a kid, I grew up with a mom who, she loved Westerns. And so we would always watch Westerns together. And she was a very interactive viewer. She still is a very interactive viewer of all mediums. She will let you know what she's thinking and what she thinks the character's going to think. And she kind of got my brain working with that stuff. And she was really into quite a diverse, you know, this was probably in like the late 70s, early 80s. She would watch sci-fi movies. So like Westworld, she loved that, Yul Brynner, the original Westworld. Logan's Run, all those types of movies. And as a kid, that was what really got me going. And then I've always really wanted to work. I'm basically a frustrated sci-fi filmmaker. I've never had the chance to do that because you tend to get not pigeonholed, but if you're good at something, people want you to keep doing that. But yeah, I would love it if Joseph Kosinski called me and was like, okay, I've got this big site. I would just love to work on a science fiction movie. That would be incredible. But yeah, in terms of what inspired my cutting for Minecraft, I'm always led by the cadence of dialogue, the rhythm of dialogue, especially with comedy, because it's all about those rhythms. And so I just sort of go with my gut, really. You know, if something feels off, it probably is. You look at it and you rework it. And I go next door and I say to Delaney, what do you think of this? And why don't you take a crack at this? And she'll have a go at it. And she sends it back. And we kind of workshop stuff. I tend to just go with my gut reaction, right? Because an editor, again, this is a cliche, but I think it's really true. We are the first audience member, right, to see anything. And so I think your gut reaction to something when you see it is really important. You know, I do like to sit and watch daily, so I'll just sit with a notebook and just write notes about, you know, scenes and how they make me feel and whether I think we're missing anything. Or so, yeah, I tend to just listen to my own sort of internal compass as to whether something's funny, whether the action's working, whether the music's right, whether the sound isn't quite correct. And then just having collaborators around you who want to keep exploring, keep changing stuff. And with a movie like Minecraft, we had the luxury of a really amazing team that I could, you know, if I was swamped with something, I could say to Delaney or Jono or, you know, other folks that were working with us, take a crack at it. They'd have a go, we'd sit and watch it together, and then, you know, I'd be able to sort of cherry pick pieces from what they'd done. And so it's truly a team effort.
Yeah. And that gut instinct that you talk about is like what gives you your edge. That's what people pay big money for. That's what people want. Is that something that you can teach and train up and that people could hone? Or is that just something that just is there or not?
I think it is to a degree. So I definitely do think you can teach techniques and skills and the rhythm of things. But comedy is such a personal thing. You know, some people will find a joke hilarious and some people will be like, that's obnoxious. You know, and the way that comedy has evolved and the way society's evolved and the way that we are able to be funny nowadays is very different from when I started my career. When I first started out, a lot of comedy was predicated on, it was quite mean, right? And so that isn't something that really flies nowadays. But I think you have to trust your gut. I guess to answer your question, I don't think you can teach a sense of humor, but you can, all the other tricks, absolutely. You can teach, like how to use sound, how to build to a joke, how to undercut something with music, how to overplay something with music. You can absolutely help someone with those. But then it basically, you know, editing's about taste. It is ultimately about taste. You know, what your taste is, ultimately what the director's taste is. The best collaboration is a combination of the two of you working together. So if you've got taste that people seem to respond to and like, then keep doing that.
I love what you said about editor being the first audience member. I've also heard it said the final director as well. You know, the film is made three times when it's written, shot, and then edited. And I think you bring a lot of that to your projects. I think it takes a good director to be a good editor. Have you ever desired to direct?
I've thought about it. I've definitely thought about it. But yes, and I think if the right opportunity came along, I would absolutely go for it. But I'm pretty happy with my lane. You know, I really enjoy the collaboration. Hopefully now on these, getting to work on these bigger projects, I'm just meeting and working with some really incredible artists and I'm enjoying that. Whereas I think if I was to suddenly decide I wanted to direct, I do know quite a few editors who've done it and it's been great. And some of they've been very successful, but they don't want to continue directing. But yes, of course. I mean, if the right opportunity came along, I would absolutely jump at it.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks.
Well, thank you. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you, Gavin.
Yes. Same with you, James. It's been a real treat. Tell the people listening at home how we can keep up with you and your work and follow along.
I'm not a big social media guy, but watch this space, because I think hopefully that's going to be something that I'm addressing. So I'm going to start using socials a bit more. But yeah, I mean, look, I'm a under the radar, below the line guy. And that's what editing is. You know, editing is not about fanfare. It's like, if we do our jobs right, it's called the invisible art for a reason, right? If we do our jobs correctly, you have a fantastic experience, but you're not aware of the hand. Keep watching the movies, you know, it's the best way to keep going with it. But yes, I'm not a big socials guy. I wish I could say I was, but I'm not.
No, I love that. You're dropping some good stuff on ethos of editing. And it's funny, a lot of the people that I talk to in post are like, I'm too busy working. And I'm like, I love that. Making good art and entertaining us along the way. And then that's the whole purpose of this podcast, really, is to shine a light on the people that are, you know, that invisible art. It's so cool to hear about you and your process and what it's taken to get there. And thank you so much for the knowledge and all the insights that you've shared with us.
Absolute pleasure. Really great talking to you.